LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15.
We're in high school, I'd take you behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
His Twitter account should be suspended.
Right. You want to go to work? Go take the job as an essential worker. Do it tomorrow.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be when people realize.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
I'm high as a kite in my garage, and I can see through these guys.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the official gun control podcast of LibertyNation.com. I think I can say that. If you thought that there would be a week without a gun control story, this week you'd be wrong. Once again, there is big news there, and some of it comes out of foreign policy. Our State Department wasn't too busy committing malpractice in Afghanistan to impact negatively our fundamental firearms rights. Let's go ahead and jump right into that. On Friday, you know, they say that they take out the trash, the administrations do, on the Friday news stories. So for somebody who's looking skeptically at administration business, it always kind of behooves you to stick around on Friday afternoon and see what gets dumped out with the news cycle. One of the things that came out this past Friday was that the State Department, again, supposed to be scrambling to get every last American out of Kabul, Afghanistan, and also our combat allies there. But they took the time out of their busy schedules to ban the importation of Russian ammunition and arms into the United States. The name of the law that they used is called the Chemical and Biological Weapons Control and Warfare Elimination Act of 1991. And basically, the Russian authorities, Putin, his thugs, his allies, they used this nerve agent poison to poison Alexei Navalny, one of these opposition candidates in Russia. I don't think this particular one is a billionaire type. I think he's more of a good government opposition party leader type. And of course, if we believe what we're told, President Putin does not abide those sorts of figures, and he tries to murder them. And apparently that's what he tried to do with Mr. Navalny, with poison. There's the operative part of that story. If he didn't use poison, if they just beat him with brass knuckles until he was dead or badly bad off, like he actually didn't die, he's alive now. They didn't kill him with their nerve agent. And so if they use something other than this nerve agent, then the Biden administration wouldn't have the ability through current federal law to ban these imports like they've done. They've used this Weapons and Warfare Elimination Act in order to enact this ammo ban. And basically what it does is it says that there are many firearms laws that do not apply equally to domestic versus international trade. It's one of the areas where there's probably the biggest difference. And what I mean by that is, as long as you are willing to follow the rules, you can establish a U.S.-based firearms manufacturing facility as long as you can pass the background checks and comply with the compliance issues, have it in a properly zoned area, so on and so forth. You can manufacture firearms that are like AR-15s that Sarah Brady would call an assault weapon. But you can't by right do that from foreign ground. That's because the way that the importation laws are crafted, there's wild latitude given to what we allow in the country versus what people have the right to manufacture and sell within the country. The same is true. Ammunition comes into play in these areas. It's always usually lumped in and included with guns. And this restriction kills both. It says, reading now from the State Department, new sanctions imposed today include restrictions on the permanent imports of certain Russian firearms, new and pending permit applications for the permanent importation of firearms and ammo manufacturer located in Russia will be subject to a policy of denial. So don't even bother sending in the application, we're going to deny it. And you have to apply to import ammo that you wouldn't have to apply to just manufacture or transfer from one state to another, for instance. So that really impacts guys who like to shoot mostly a couple types of calibers that the Russians are known for using more than others. I think Tokarov, 9mm Tokarov is one for the handgun, and the round that, and here we go with the scariness that the AK-47 takes, 7.62 by 39 will be, will be most impacted. I remember when Bill Clinton was president and he had a reputation of using every, when they wanted to enact gun control, they didn't just try to pass a single gun control law through the Congress and have that applied. No, it was every single federal agency, every possible method of influence and control they used to enact their policy provisions. So, in fact, Mr. Cuomo, I think, was at the Housing and Urban Development. Anyway, but they were using their power there to kind of take away the search and seizure rights of people who lived in public housing with respect to firearms. And I hate to see if President Biden is now going to use, for instance, the State Department to enact gun control measures or measures that simply frustrate U.S. gun owners. It's hard to imagine that if you're a manufacturing company or just have the inventory in Russia of a popular rifle round in the United States that's used worldwide, but also in the United States, why does denying them the ability to sell it to the United States accrue to our safety benefit or the safety benefit of the world or the good governance of the world? That's what it seems like the application of this is designed to do. The second part of the rule says that that additional Department of Commerce export restrictions on nuclear and missile related goods and technology pursuant to the Export Control Act. So yeah, fine. You want to regulate their nukes, their nerve agent production? That seems like a great thing to do in response to this impermissible, thuggish behavior on the international level. But why are you going after U.S. gun owners? Because it seems like we have this pinch of supply for ammunition right now. And for those of you who don't know, don't shoot, there's a real concern merging into a minor crisis right now over the lack of availability of ammunition. I spoke to a police officer who listens to this program, and he was remarking to me about how police instructors are now really having an issue with getting their sort of topping off their training ammo and getting it at the price, you can still get it, but at what price? Not at a price that's been authorized often. And for regular shooters, there's like these little groups that communicate, oh, go to the Walmart. They got a truck in, there's some 9mm that just arrived there. And as soon as the ammo hits the shelves, it's gone. The Jim Fight, writer for LibertyNation.com, wrote about this, and he said there's a 2-year, or he quoted somebody in his research, there's a 2-year backlog of 9mm, I think, and 45 orders. So to do this right in the middle of that, and why go on so much about this? Well, because if this were another right, if this were the right to abortion, for instance, and there was like some abortion drug that came out of Russia that we could ban as a result of this, it doesn't require that we ban the importation of ammunition. This is a get-to thing. This is a thing that the Biden administration gets to do if they want to, and that they chose to do so in a way that negatively impacts the expression of a fundamental right, I think, is a really odious thing. And we won't see that. This is why Clarence Thomas, and I'm paraphrasing loosely, called the Second Amendment the redheaded stepchild of the Bill of Rights. Because the court won't take the cases to demand that the constitutional provision is protected like it is in other instances, like the abortion issue, which, of course, you can feel free to find that people have a constitutionally protected right to abortion, but we can't say that it's at the level of the right to keep and bear arms when the right to keep and bear arms was explicitly stated in the Bill of Rights, and surgical abortion didn't exist at the time of its offering. So I hope that reasonable people can at least agree on that. Perhaps not for the feminazis, as Rush Limbaugh would have called them, but those are probably few and far between. All right. Couple more gun control stories that came out this week out of Hawaii, of all places. Hawaii, for people who don't know, is quietly one of the worst gun control jurisdictions in the country. They have, the right to keep and bear arms, the right to carry a gun. The states that offer that are usually divided up into may issue states and shall issue states. And that's sort of been the modern, the clarion call? Anyway, the rubber meets the road for gun control issues in my lifetime, the biggest change has been a sea change from most states only allowing some people to carry a concealed weapon if they meet extraordinary permission. You know, if you had you owned a jewelry store, had a cash business, you were in with somebody important, and that has changed to become where it is now for most Americans. If you meet a certain qualification, just like for your driver's license, you get the right to have that license issued to you. You don't have to be in the good graces of the chief of police or the mayor. But some places you do, and we call those places may issue. New Jersey's a may issue. New York is a may issue. Maryland, certainly, for instance. And Hawaii, the joke is that it's a non-issue or no-issue state, because there, even in Maryland or New York, you get some people who get those licenses. Some people who have shown extraordinary threats to their lives, or they're extraordinarily well-connected politically, at least, or they're extraordinarily famous sometimes. Those people often get these permits in these places, but not Hawaii, where there's been no issues years. And that's where this case is out of. I talked to there's a team of lawyers who took this case to court and won it. Steve Stambouli is one of the team that I spoke with, and Steve gave me a lot of time. I'm thankful for that, to let me in on a lot of issues that he's working on. He's a national gun rights lawyer. He's out of Mississippi, I believe, and it just so happens that a guy he does a lot of legal work with is a Hawaii native, and that's sort of how the case came to them. But Hawaii requires, so the process to legally buy a gun, well, for most, let's do this. Let's say you have no experience in how it works when most people go to buy a gun. In most places, you go buy a gun, you go to the store. If there's a waiting period, you pay your money, you put your information into the computer, and it comes back. Could be instantly, or it could be a few days or so, and then you take possession of your weapons, and then you go home. Here's how it worked in Hawaii, at least until Steve got done with them. In Hawaii, you'd apply for the right or the ability to purchase a firearm. You wait 14 days for that to expire, and if you weren't prohibited, they would grant you this permission slip to then go buy a firearm. You take that permission slip, and then you go to the gun store. You had 10 days to get that done. Now, this, of course, all these day requirements, that doesn't count. You know, if you miss a day because you missed the email come in, you were busy, something going on with your kids or your work, doesn't matter. Holidays, doesn't matter. This is how you exercise your fundamental rights. So you've got your 10 days now to go to the gun store to get a gun. You get your gun. And then now the third clock starts, which is 5 days then to go to the police station for the purpose of them inspecting physically in person and recording the serial number. Isn't the serial number recorded already from the federally licensed firearms dealer that you purchased the gun from? Well, yeah, it is, but that doesn't matter, or at least it didn't matter. And these restrictions were basically put into law by the legislature there and I think Honolulu City Council may be one of them, just to frustrate people's attempts to buy a gun. There was no finding that it led to any safety improvement or some kind of cooling off period. There seems to be no reason for it whatsoever except to frustrate people's will to go buy a firearm. And Steve told me that his clients were just some regular guys that they didn't want to have to take work off or see their fellow Hawaiians have to take off in order to exercise a fundamental right. And boy, I think he's doing a great job. And then he won. And not only did he win, but he won at the summary judgment phase. So there didn't have to be a trial, which is expensive and in this case unnecessary because the facts were not really up for grabs. The facts are they implemented this process and this is what, you know, hoops people had to go through and was that legal? And that was a federal district court. So I asked what he thought the chances are were of an appeal and if so, would it be successful? And he basically told me that it would be silly to even speculate. You just have to wait and see what they're going to do. They're in the Ninth Circuit. So that is super, super liberal. We'll have to see. One of the things that Steve was talking to me about, and I have to say, I'm rarely kind of blindsided by right to keep and bear arms issues because I tend to pay attention to them. But he was talking to me a lot about how he has a significant litigation practice going in and litigating taser and pepper spray cases. And I just never really think of those when it comes to arms, the right to keep and bear arms. But of course, it's not all firearms. And it's amazing how many places would deny, and Hawaii is one of these, or has tried to be one of these places, why we got started talking about it, sort of how bad they are with trying to keep people from practical self-defense. You know, the idea that you would not only keep them from firearms, but from other types of, you know, less than lethal arms. What are people supposed to do? We're all supposed to be MMA fighters, or is it really just you get to, you know, if you're in power and you have a gun, you get to, you know, you get to say what happens, right? Well, that is no bueno. Well, the third thing that happened this week is the United States Supreme Court said that they are going to hear the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association case on November 3rd. It's the, is it the second week that the court sits? Anyway, it's early in the term. So it wouldn't be unheard of to get an opinion actually in 2021 on it. I'm not predicting that is going to happen. I'm just saying the earlier that they hear the case should be the earlier that we get a verdict in the case. I did speak with Mr. Stambouli about this, given his profile as a national gun rights litigator. And he thought that the way that the court narrowed the question presented did not bode well for kind of a wide sweeping judgment that I think a lot of gun rights proponents are hoping for. I know that when I put on my my gun rights cheerleader hat and pom-poms, that's what I want from the court, a bright line ruling that doesn't leave any wiggle room for the kind of imposition against rights that we see in Hawaii. Even still, the standard of review that the court used, it was an intermediate standard. And when fundamental rights are implicated, there's a higher standard that can be used by courts to judge laws against, and it's a strict scrutiny standard. And very few laws stand up against strict scrutiny compared to intermediate scrutiny, in which case a fair amount will stand up to. And the third level of scrutiny is rational basis, and basically everything fits into a rational basis standard. So there was another gun control story in the news this week. This one was out of Pittsburgh, and it's a good result for gun rights proponents because the Pittsburgh authorities were told that they couldn't use zoning laws to basically cancel out a gun range. There was this longstanding gun range. I forget how many years it operated for, but then it kind of became defunct. And a guy bought the property and was going to reanimate it and reinstitute it. And the people around him didn't want the shooting anymore. And instead of, you know, giving him an offer on the land, which is what they could have done, or using the takings clause. And let's just take a minute to discuss how the takings clause works. There is a mechanism by which you can take somebody's land that the community can rise up together and say, we demand this land be used for something rather than the way it is being used. And the way we do that is we pay the people whose land it is to kick them off the land. Now, it's not supposed to be used capriciously, but that's what the taking clause is there for. So if everybody within a mile of this property wants no shooting on the property, that's the appropriate way to get no shooting on it, not to run to the county zoning board to have it rezoned after all these years. So you can basically steal it, because then the guy already bought the property knowing with the anticipation of using it for the one purpose. And then you rip the carpet out from under him. Go ahead and just put your big boy pants on and pay the money out. And then you could do with it whatever you want, but that's not what the people want. Not in my backyard types. They want the landowner to bear the cost of their preferences, which, boy, that just seems odious. So they said that the property had to be owned by a nonprofit company, and that it couldn't shoot, that it restricted the type of ammo used there to 22 rimfire. So this was also a summary judgment, an interlocutory appeal is the right way to say it. The case, one part of his case was stricken down, and he didn't get the chance to litigate the full thing as to whether or not they can put this range back into use. But he appealed the notion to the Third Circuit that they could require this change in ownership requirement, require one certain type of corporate ownership, namely a nonprofit, and this ammunition restriction. And so we're not 100% through the woods on this, but I think it was a good argument, or rather a good result in the Third Circuit. They said to the lower court, you can't just require these things. And the reason why is the Second Amendment right of the landowner. And they used intermediate scrutiny as well. That's sort of what can change if the court does what Mr. Stambouli thinks it might not, and what I'm hoping it does, and what a lot of the other gun rights folks are hoping. But we know that the court will break our hearts, I guess, if we hope too hard. So, all right, that'll be it for the gun control portion of our podcast. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Afghanistan. And I think I underrated the tally when we talked about it last week. We said that it was a trillion-dollar proposition. It's $2 trillion seems to be the number that is bandied about more frequently now, and I'm willing to believe it. And I think it illustrates in a great way, if we don't talk about anything else, forgetting, and I don't want to forget about the loss of life and that kind of thing, but if it was just an economic question, what did we get for $2 trillion? Couldn't we have purchased that level of safety for a massive amount less? Well, there's a great clip on a Taliban spokesman being asked about free speech and how it compares to America. Let's go ahead and give that a listen.
دغه دا سوال خو باید فیسبوک له ادارې سره وي چې د بیان د ازادۍ دعوت دوی کوي او دلته خلک د بیان د ازادۍ
This question should be asked to those people who are claiming to be promoters of freedom of speech who do not allow publication of all information. I can ask Facebook company. This question should be asked to them.
Gotta love the Taliban jokers. They had a Twitter post where they were all licking ice cream cones like Joe Biden, trying to troll him. Well, they're doing a good job of that. And the shameful part, though, I think, is not just our citizens, but those that we ask to work on our behalf. And there was just a heartbreaking phone call from a human rights lawyer to CNN, and it's tough to listen to, but I think it's necessary medicine. I mean, Joe Biden should certainly be forced to listen to it, but I wanted us to take a listen as well, because these people are out there and they need our help.
Why have the American soldiers forgetting about us after everything we did? The sacrifices we made. Why are you leaving us behind? I don't want to be killed by the Taliban. They're gonna cut our heads off if they find my location. Please help.
Are they going to get it? Well, not if the State Department's spending its time devising new ways to frustrate the Second Amendment expression of us Americans. We're not going to get it. The State Department said today, as I record this on Saturday, the 21st of August, for Americans not to go to the airport in Kabul because the security situation wasn't safe for them, and that they're to wait for some other means of exfiltration from the country. And Joe Biden, he's, you know, I think we've avoided it on the uprising, the sort of asleep at the switch or doesn't know what's going on criticisms of Biden, just because there's so much to criticize with the policies themselves. But he does seem to be it. Did you catch this?
When you look at what's happened over the last week, was it a failure of intelligence, planning, execution, or judgment?
Look, I don't think it was a failure. Look, it was a simple choice, George. When the Taliban, let me back it, put it another way. When you had the government of Afghanistan, the leader of that government, getting in a plane and taking off and going to another country, when you saw the significant collapse of the Afghan troops we had trained, up to 300,000 of them, just leaving their equipment and taking off. That was, you know, that's what happened. That's simply what happened.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw those pictures?
What I thought was we have to gain control of this. We have to move this more quickly. We have to move in a way in which we can take control of that airport. And we did.
So you don't think this could have been handled? This actually could have been handled better in any way? No mistakes?
No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that we're going to go back in hindsight and look. But the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens. I don't know how that happened.
So for you, that was always priced into the decision?
Yes.
So it was days ago, and there's nothing you would have done differently and couldn't have foreseen where things are. But one man absolutely did foresee it. The lone libertarian member of Congress at the time, Dr. Ron Paul. And, you know, we got to pay homage where it's due. There was one man in the Congress talking about this the way he was, and he knew.
The question we're facing today is, should we leave Afghanistan? I think the answer is very clear, and it's not complicated. And of course, we should, as soon as we can. This suggests that we can leave by the end of the year. If we don't, we'll be there for another decade, would be my prediction. The American people are now with us. A group of us here in the Congress, bipartisan group, for nearly a decade have been talking about this, arguing not to expand the war, not to be over there, not to be in nation building, and the American people didn't pay much attention. Now they are. The large majority of the American people now say it's time to get out of Afghanistan. It's a fruitless venture. Too much has been lost. The chance of winning, since we don't even know what we're going to win, doesn't exist. So they are tired of it. Financially, there's a good reason to come home as well. Some argue we have to be there because if we leave under these circumstances, we'll lose face. It will look embarrassing to leave. So how many more men and women have to die? How many more dollars have to be spent to save face? That is one of the worst arguments possible. We're not there under legal conditions. This is a war. Who says it isn't a war? Everybody talks about the Afghan war. Was the war declared? Of course not. It wasn't declared. There was a resolution passed that said that the president at that time, under the emergency of 9/11, could go and deal with al-Qaeda, those who dealt and brought upon the 9/11 bombings. But al-Qaeda is not there anymore, so we're fighting the Taliban. The Taliban used to be our allies at one time when the Soviets were there. Taliban wants, their main goal is to keep foreign occupationers out. They want foreigners out of their country. They're not al-Qaeda. Yet most Americans, maybe less so now, but the arguments here on the floor is we got to go after al-Qaeda. This is not a war against al-Qaeda. If anything, it gives the incentive for al-Qaeda to grow in numbers rather than dealing with them.
One of the things that we'll hear some of the more saner generals discuss is that we couldn't have won because we didn't have a defined course for victory. And that's one of the things that the constitutional order for war might solve. If instead of doing these defense authorization bills, we actually had to have a bill of war. There's a reason why Congress has the sole ability to declare war. It's the people's house, and it can keep those decisions closer to the people. It's every 2 years, let's remember. So by requiring Congress to actually pass a resolution to call for war, you can really limit the scope of that war. And I think it would likely keep them a little bit more accountable for war. And boy, I hope that we all think more and more about the wars before we agree to go in them, lest we have another situation like this. All right, well, that's it for this edition of The Uprising. Remember to hit Liberty Nation News for original articles, the Rabbit Hole podcast, and our signature television program, The Conservative Five. Just go to libertynation.com on your browser or hit Rumble, YouTube, or check out our Liberty Nation News Roku channel. I'm Scott Cosenza. Thanks for watching. This program is a production of libertynation.com, conservative news where truth matters.
Who are we? We are Americans that believe in liberty. We are a project of the nonprofit One Generation Away. We are patriots who apply the founding principles to the issues of today.
And they keep moving the goalposts on us.
We are educators and commentators who love America and the Constitution. Who are we? We are Liberty Nation.